What are we doing here? Does someone know? I think that the greatest wealth is having the right questions. And having so many myself, I'm going to be happily sharing as many as possible this evening, including the title of this talk. What are we doing here? Have you noticed that we are always here, following the body around or being followed by the body? Do we actually know what the body is? Is it possible to know what the body is? Last summer, I was visiting the United States, and my family and friends live all over the place, so I was spending some fair amount of time in airports. And I think that they want to try to keep people distracted from any fears they might have about flying. So there's always a television going. And it's either telling you that your flight is going to be boarding in 5 minutes and your seat number is going to be boarding in 10 minutes, and the person behind you is going to be boarding in 12 minutes. Literally, they're actually putting this on the screen. Or there's what they call the news. And one time I made the mistake of actually looking up at the screen. And I was really horrified by what I saw. I couldn't see the image, but I saw the title of the image. And I'd heard about this, but I was horrified by the questions that were being raised. What I'd heard about is that there's an epidemic, which means like a disease spreading really quickly across the country. And the epidemic is called childhood obesity. Obesity means that the body is much, much bigger than it wants to be. So childhood obesity was the subject. But what was horrifying was the questions that were being raised. These simple words that I saw on the screen were as follows. It's almost too horrible to say. Childhood obesity surgery, is it safe? What kind of mind is revealed in that question? How small of a mind comes up with that question in that subject? Further, wanting to harm the body to get rid of what is seen as the problem, instead of finding some good questions. Like, what nourishment is that child looking for and not getting? If the nourishment is there, why is the child not getting it? And if it's not there, why is it not there? I think it's important to notice that in our cultures, there's not people asking questions that make sense. And it could be up to us to do that. There doesn't seem to be anyone else to do it. It might be that if we can step beyond the horror, we notice ourselves asking these simplistic and small-minded questions about ourselves as well. We also find things heavy and unbearable and out of proportion in our own lives. And we also want surgery. We want the quick fix, even if it's violent and stupid and coming from the wrong questions. There's a big hint that the teachings that human beings have been coming up with can give us. Wise teachings. Whenever we notice that something in our lives or in our experience is out of proportion, either very heavy, too big, or very small, too contracted, it's an indication that there's disconnection. It's an indication that we need to look for what nourishment is missing and why. Is it because there's not the nourishment? Is it because there's a block not receiving the nourishment in ourselves? So any one of us could have the courage to look at today, what has happened today, or even now, what's happening now in our own experience, and sense what is out of proportion, what is heavy, what is unbearable, and try to find a way to connect. Mostly, the way we're living all day is not really living, in fact. There's one Tibetan teacher who calls it psychosomatic living. Even when we try to get in touch with our actual physical experience, we experience our psychosomatic body. Basically, that means we're experiencing mind and small mind rather than real body. We have dinner and it's psychosomatic dinner. It's our ideas that we eat rather than the food. And so a lot of the nourishment that's in the food we miss because we're not there. There's a way in which all of our experience, this psychosomatic living, our experience is memory rather than presence or aliveness. And it can be dangerous to our sense of security to start to question the way we've been living, to start to question what is left of our experience if we see memory as memory, small mind as small mind. One simple example that many of us can relate to, and this could be a good example to bring up on what someone told me is International Women's Day. So many of us women spend so much of our lives hating our bodies, without actually connecting to the bodies. Many men as well, but this time you come along and imagine what it would be like to be a woman in our culture. There are so many of us women, if we try to connect to our own body, let's say we catch a glimpse in the mirror or we look directly. We try to look directly. And the mirror of memory or mind is actually what we see. We see that toenail that's somehow not quite the right shape. And we see the one white hair or scar or most commonly, wherever we think we're too fat. That's all that we see. We don't see the mystery. We don't see the amazing thing that we are taking care of, that is perfect because it is. So let's apply this to what we think of as meditation experience, which we often commonly think of as something separate from life. We hear sounds, and our experience, our actual real experience, is that the sounds are disturbing us. The sounds are coming and taking us away from now. And even if we give a little bit of sort of mental acknowledgement that the sound is actually happening now, so it's not actually taking me away from now, our actual, what we believe, is that it's disturbing us. And it could be absolutely liberating right now to destroy that habit of belief, believing that the sound is taking me away, and trying to look into what's actually happening there. If we look at the situation as if from outside, what seems to be happening is that we are disturbing the sound. Sound is part of now. And we come along with our idea of meditation and what we want from it, and we disturb the sound. Another favorite of the last few days is the temperature. We feel that the temperature is disturbing. We believe. We spend our whole day believing that the temperature is disturbing us. Probably without a single moment of letting the temperature just be. I'm not saying that it's easy or ideal. I'm not saying that we designed it this way, or that I would wish this for you. But it is. But if there's another way that's not a punishment, but if there's another way that's actually more fun than blaming what is all day long. Part of what could be helpful there is to try to find out by going in, try to find out that place in us that wants to feel that something is disturbing me. It wants to believe that all day, instead of letting what is be free and finding out that we are also part of what is and free. So we have a big kind of possibility that's open and opening out for us all the time. And what would allow us to walk into that openness? Where cold is cold. It doesn't mean that we're going to just be cold until we die tonight, sometime around midnight. Blankets are also part of what is. Another way in, through this kind of blinding mirror of small mind, is just this simple practice that we're mentioning all the time. For example, being aware while walking, being aware of the body while walking. Sometimes it happens that at first we're so surprised by the exercise that we're kind of able to be honest and fresh and confused by it. And then we start to get expert. We make ourselves feel more comfortable with what we're doing. And you might just check as you're walking. Sometimes it's possible to notice that what I'm being aware of is what I expect the next step to feel like, rather than what it actually feels like. And I've got the good image in my mind about what it looks like, even though I've never actually put my eyes in my lower belly. I believe that image. And I'm willing to accept that image so that it's easier. I feel more comfortable. I feel like I know what I'm doing. So I agree that it's a little bit tricky of us to tell each other that it's just so simple. Just be aware. Be aware of the body. It sounds so basic. But every time we're actually open to the experience that we call body, we're destroying what we call ego, let's say. We're destroying all of these huge constructions of habits that are so heavily weighing us down. Every time we are feeling a certain kind of pain of opening to the unknown, because the actual experience that we call body is unknowable. It's very definitely something going on, and it very definitely is not what we think is going on. Have you noticed that? Have you believed your own experience? But the body is not the image we have of it. The body is not our idea of it. And the body can never be an idea. An idea can never be the body. It can be really painful to go against our habits. And I would really recommend getting to know that kind of pain here while you're on retreat, so that you can recognize it's the pain of waking up. It's a pain that something in us is very willing, happily, to have more of without a break. The pain of lightening, letting go of the burdens, the barnacles, like on a ship in the ocean, those animals that grow on the ship, those hard little crusts. It's good to know the difference between the pain of walking into that open space that's always following us around, called our actual direct experience, our life, and to know that how different that is from the pain of habits, the pain of putting more weight on our backs, of getting more out of proportion in the way of living. There's something in us that's willing to do anything at all to interrupt habit. There's something in us that we could say is crazy, or at least wild as the desert, as wild as those flowers that we walked by today. I would recommend taking the advice of that wild part. And whenever you notice that you're obeying habit, just because it's habit, not because it makes sense, do anything at all different, including stand on your head, talk backwards, say the alphabet. One small, powerful example or technique that can also give you a sense of how much resistance you'll be facing to go against habit. Usually, we're walking around feeling so poor and so burdened by our problems and our worries, by that heavy stuff that we just put on our back. We're so preoccupied with that. We kind of wish that we had more to give to other people, but we don't have time right now because we've got all this stuff to carry around. I don't really quite have time to go and get more toilet paper to put in the bathrooms so that the next person who comes finds toilet paper in the bathroom, for example. I'm having such a hard day because it's so cold that I just better take the rest of the olives, even if other people haven't had them. So the exercise and example is giving something to another person anyway. It's totally simple and totally difficult. As an idea. And once we get past that block of the idea of giving, and we just do it, we've just found our new addiction. We notice that giving puts us in touch with our wealth, our richness, our power. Another little trick in working with scraping off the barnacles. It's also difficult as an idea before we do it, and a lot of fun once it happens to us. It's just called cutting the story. It's really another way to say the same thing. Usually, all day and almost all night, we've got a nice story going with ourselves as the star. We're either the star, worst person in the room, worst meditator, or maybe we're the star, most potential to change, meditator, or most hungry, or whatever. Probably most cold was the one that we were playing the last few days. And just stopping. Stop telling the story. And in any way, whatever you can find, notice something that's actually happening now. That's going on whether you are cold or not. Maybe the cold itself. Maybe the cold itself turns into a vast, endless space of adventure, as big as our interest is. It's actually only limiting when we relate to it as an idea of cold. Well, too cold. I have a friend who used to have a problem with eating too much. And she had to work with this habit of eating her ideas of food and therefore eating too much food in her case. Sometimes it goes the other way around, not enough. In her case, too much food went in. And what she found helped the most was to decide what she most wanted to eat, to get that pack of 6 muffins or whatever it was. Muffins are like little small cakes. And to eat them, but actually really to eat them. Actually taste the muffins. Go slow. And let the taste interrupt the speedy thinking habits. It can be helpful to keep in mind when we are finding a way to soften into our experience and actually meet it, finally. That when we cut the story, we cut the idea, we don't need to replace it with something. We don't need to replace it with the idea of being present. Actually, being present does not really give us anything to hold on to. Just now, if you feel yourself sitting on the ground or lying on the ground, there's nothing to catch, nothing to hold on to. One of my favorite poets talked about this as one gesture, in the same gesture, receiving and letting go. Here come the questions. If we really directly experience body, receiving it, letting it go, one gesture. In my experience, what we come up with are a huge amount of questions. Really cool questions, I think. What was that word? Magnif. What is the body made for? For example, what does it actually seem to be made for? I think it's really cool if we actually look at the body in a fresh way. It's totally obvious that the body was never made for fighting. We have no beak, which is what the birds have, leaving all those shells of the snails in the desert. We do not have really sharp fingernails that come to a point. We don't have sort of a big hard shell on the back. We actually have no protection at all. That's how the body is made. That's how the body makes itself somehow. That's another question. And as far as I understand, with all of our scientific knowledge, we still have no clue how the body knows how to make itself this shape. And while we're looking at that, how is it possible with so many of us that we are all different? That is really weird. We can't even really imagine 6 billion people. It's beyond what we can imagine, I think. We can probably imagine about 50,000. We can imagine if we're on top of a mountain and the mountain's covered with people, that's about how many we might be able to see. Every single one different. Even the voice is different. And we can't do much about it. Did anyone notice who is it that's in charge of breathing? Does anyone have any idea what we're supposed to do with our bodies? What does it mean to have a body? A body that we can't do much to change. There are the surgeons available. If we like a different nose or whatever. But if we just let our body sit comfortably on us, what does it mean to have it? It seems to be ours and not ours. Mine and not mine. We seem to be the only one who, for as long as we can most easily feed ourselves. We're not sort of saying, oh, we're all one, feed me. And we're not just sort of saying, oh, it's not really my body, I'm not the body. I read that somewhere. So, therefore, if the body shits here, it's not my shit. We're not actually doing that. We take ourselves to the toilet. Having a body, we seem to constantly be having to place it in rooms where there's other bodies. And this is so interesting on retreats, because talking is not masking what's happening. So we have the chance to see where we put our body, and whether the body chose the place or whether the mind chose the place, whether the habits chose the place. Am I sitting in the back or the front or the middle or the sides? Why? Do I know why? Is it conscious? Is it just blindness, blind habit? When we're walking through the landscape, is there a habit that makes me be at the front or the middle or the back? Is it some feeling of poverty, which is another word for habit, the fuel for habit? It makes me feel I can do nothing other. Poor me, I'm having such a hard day. I can do nothing other than what I usually do. Front, back, middle, walking off to the side, etc. It would be good to get in touch with some other kind of wild voice in us that knows now that is my place. Not going by memory. It would be good for so many reasons to contact that kind of wild knowing, that kind of lightness that's willing to cut across habit. Because it does make a difference if our body, for example, comes into this room late or leaves early, and we are probably not aware of it, but everyone else might be aware of what we're breaking by doing that. There's something that requires kind of a huge sensitivity, a huge lightness of touch, to feel what goes on in a room of people sitting silently, lying silently together, that is affected by one person leaving. It's strange, but if we can be patient to start to have the sensitivity to feel that, to have the lightness of touch, to feel something that soft, so soft as silence, as soft as connection, it starts to be clear that although in some ways this is my body, there are many ways that my body is everybody, and my body is everybody's. Strangely, it seems to be helpful to limit the thinking. That there's a possibility to allow expansiveness to happen. When we start to seemingly limit ourselves, following the schedule, being in silence, accepting whatever food is put on the table for us, accepting who else is here, inside and outside. At first, we can notice actually within the body a feeling of lifting. It turns out that the body actually gives us a place to practice, to learn. Without the body, it would be so difficult. It's our idea of body that's limiting. So at first, we feel this kind of buoyancy, I would say. Buoyancy is when something wants to float. It's always coming up to the top. First, it's only possible to feel it inside the body. At first, that's the only way. Later on, we find the same experience in our larger body, in our everybody. So if we get to know this pain of crossing and cutting habit, which means stopping the cutting of life, we find out that practice is celebration, actually and in fact. The most fun that we could possibly have is practice. You can go either way. You can find out what's most really, really fun for you and do that as your practice. Or you can do the simple practice, giving space for that lifting, that lightness, and find the joy that way, or let the joy find you. When we realize that this is what life is actually about, because practice equals life, in fact, we suddenly see how ridiculous it would be to continue being stingy with ourselves. You know what stingy is? Stingy is not giving generously, holding back. It's what happens, let's say, sometimes at the beginning of a 45-minute meditation. We feel like, I better save some of my energy so that I can hold on till the end, so I won't give everything now. Another way of being stingy is giving ourselves sort of not of the best, giving ourselves sort of the police officers, the mean babysitters, the scraps, the worries and controlling, basically. Giving the best, giving our own presence, our own honesty, our own experience, actually giving it to ourselves, not funneling it into the mind so that the mind is getting out of proportion. Fully giving our eyes and our ears to ourselves. Somewhere we feel that would be unsustainable. I couldn't continue living that way. It would be too much, overwhelming. We can see children, and we can see gradually children stopping to be children. When they're children, just running as fast as they can for no reason, and jumping into a pile of sand on the side of the road, just for fun. When we start to be stingy with ourselves, we say, oh, I'll get dirty and then I'll have to take a shower. And that'll take up too much time. I think it would be unsustainable to run as fast as we can and jump into the pile of sand and get full of sand and then go take a shower. Or not. I've also found it so interesting here with this kind of challenging setup, the layout of the buildings, where the idea of going outside and then back inside to go to the bathroom is just too much for us. When the actual going outside, ow, what a gift. Suddenly, we're rich. We just open the door, and we're the wealthiest person in the world. All of that sky, all of that wind, all of that mess. Right now, all of those stars, before the moon comes up. Suddenly, we forgot all of those problems. Life tricked us into forgetting. And then, strangely, we seem to trick ourselves into forgetting that wealth that is contained in us. Us as one body and us as everybody. The next time we say, oh, I went around last time, I'm just going through. No one will notice. Can we live that open? Like that moment of opening the door and actually seeing and feeling the wind at the same time. The small mind says, no, I can't live that way. It's not safe. People often have the question, if it's really possible to live that open. And they have that question in a certain kind of way, which is not really a good way to ask questions. Asking the question with a no already at the end. When we've actually never tried it. We've never tried trusting openness. We've never tried trusting that transparent space in us. That is needed. There is a discrimination that is needed in that openness, actually to protect the openness, to protect us as openness. Discrimination is needed. But it's actually not the discrimination of sorting out who is a threat and who is a friend. The discrimination that's actually cutting off the dead, which is the small mind, the limited view, the psychosomatic living. Living that open is not a kind of blanking out on life. What happens is actually falling in love with everything, even what we don't like. Falling in love with that piece of garbage and the way it moves in the wind. Falling in love with someone's ear. It's like the way lovers might be. Able to look at an ear for an hour. Everything keeps opening out as big as our interest or our heart. And being that open is also not a kind of quiet in the sense of not interested and engaged. There's actually all the space for all of the creativity of the universe to come through. The difference is that we can't take credit for it anymore. this huge creativity comes through, and we feel as if we're not doing anything. And in fact, it's hard to say if we are doing anything. And yet, if we're not there, it's not happening. So it's this strange thing. Through the body, finding openness, vastness, hugeness. I'd like to end by reading a poem, part of a poem. Some of you might have heard or read this poem by Rumi. And he's talking about what it is to be one body, somebody, nobody, and everybody, all at the same time. And that would be called life. He calls it by other words. He says, there is a community of the spirit. Join it and feel the delight of walking in the noisy street and being the noise. Drink all your passion and be a disgrace. Do you know what disgrace is? What's disgrace? Okay, busha, something like that. There is a community of the spirit. Join it and feel the delight of walking in the noisy street and being the noise. Drink all your passion and be a disgrace. Bushav. Close both eyes to see with the other eye. Open your hands if you want to be held. Sit down in this circle. Sit acting like a wolf. Ve'ev. Quit acting like Ze'ev. And feel the shepherd's love filling you. Be empty of worrying. Think who created thought. Why do you stay in prison when the door is so wide open? Move outside the tangle. Svach. Move outside the svach of fear thinking. I'm going to read that one again because... Move outside the svach of fear thinking. Live in silence. Flow down and down in always widening rings of being. So let's just feel the living silence for a few moments together. May we live outside the closed circle of small mind. May we live fluidly in the opening circle of silence and delight. May all beings in all directions at all times be free.